Hi, my name is Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
All right. So, I'm a mother of four, a sister to five, a daughter to two people I love very much, a partner to one, and I am an adult child of an alcoholic. I want to say how grateful I am to be here tonight. I consider myself a somewhat shy introvert with a loathing of large groups and a fear of public speaking. But this program has given me not only a higher power of unconditional love and understanding, but also a desire to give back to what has so generously been given to me by all of you. Ever since February, when we signed up to do this speaker meeting tonight, my inner critical parent has gone into overtime, just letting me know how unqualified and unworthy I am to be speaking to you. I'm just trusting in what I know of the fellowship and of my fellow travelers to love me through this process. So, my experience. I am one of six kids, and I know that each one of us could get up here tonight, and you would hear a different story. Some would be lighter, some would be darker. This is mine and only mine. I knew at a very young age that something was wrong. I thought it was me. I was very sensitive, often felt stupid, and I embarrassed easy, took jokes to heart, handled criticism poorly. I actually still do all those things, just not quite as much as I used to. My dad was a self-admitted alcoholic. He was not an unkind man, but he was an unloved man. Two parents who were ill-equipped to parent him. He was on his own by about the time he was 15. My mother got pregnant with my oldest sister at 17, and she married my father. They were quickly shipped off to Honolulu, where my father was serving in the Coast Guard. It was there in Honolulu that my dad started drinking, and it was there where his inner demons led him on a path of self-destruction. I used to tell everybody that my dad was a happy drunk. I think that was because when things were happy, I just took those times and I wrapped them up in a beautiful box with a shiny bow. But when I dug deeper, I realized that I spent a lot of time walking around on eggshells around that man. The ever-present flicking of the head when we touched something in the car, the window or the chrome, or when we said something he had disapproved of, there was always that menace of something more. When he was angry, I was frightened, and since the drinking caused fights in the home, there was a lot of anger. Some of my strongest memories as a child were of weekends in the desert, dirt bike riding. There were many wonderful things in the desert. We had extended family, lots of friends, lots of kids, a lot of good times. But the drinking and the tension were very prevalent. I have a vivid memory of him coercing me to take a ride with him. I did not want to. Even at a young age, I knew that he was unsafe. But in the end, he just he wore me down. And I got on that motorcycle. He proceeded to drive very recklessly and eventually took a pretty good spill. And while he was able to protect me from getting hurt, he broke his arm in the process. I have striking body memory of my feet pounding on the ground and my fists clenched and the anger seething through my body at the fact that he had risked my safety once again. He was angry at me for not getting back on the motorcycle with him. Eventually, one of the other men came and picked me up and took me back to camp. I was not afraid of motorcycles, and I was not afraid of going fast. I was afraid of my father. One of the things that was never happy was the ride home. I know a few of you have heard this story, but just every time every single time we rode home on Sunday nights, it was scary. Whether he was happy with a beer between his legs or whether he and my mom were fighting, it didn't matter. He drove too fast and was reckless. If he was happy, it was just a little bit worse because whoever was sitting between him and my mom was being tickled, and he would swerve onto oncoming traffic or turn off the lights as he went around the corners. It just, you know, he would think it was funny, and somehow he thought scaring children was funny. I never will understand that. But as I sat on the floor of the car or on the seat next to him, I just waited for that feeling of weightlessness to hit. I waited for that every ride home. What I learned was that I couldn't trust him. And in reality, I really couldn't trust my mom to keep me safe either because she couldn't speak up. My dad was in the motion picture industry, so he was often gone 6 to 8 weeks at a time. Aware that he was unfaithful, my mother's apprehension when he was gone was really apparent. So some of the time, all our part of us would join him on location. I have fond memories of being on the set. There was there he kept his drinking in check, and my mom was more relaxed, and you know, my body just knew things were better. So that man, he came and went. Each time he left caused that wound of abandonment just to cut deeper and deeper in my soul. I can remember once holding on to him, crying, begging him to stay, but you know, I just didn't understand that it wasn't me. My child body thought that if I was smart enough or good enough or pretty enough that he could stay, but you know, he just couldn't. Eventually he left us for good. He met and married a woman with 4 kids, and at that point he chose not to support us very well. My mother, who had never worked outside the home and who had, in fact, never even learned to drive, was left with 4 of us still at home. And I was angry at my father and embarrassed at our change of fortune. You know, I hated the clothes I had to wear now. I hated the fact that we didn't always have food in the house and that we had to count on others to bring us what we needed, groceries or rides to the store or whatever the case may be. The feeling of being less than was certainly heightened by the change in our socioeconomic status. There was no doubt about it. The hunger, which did not happen very often, but when it did, it definitely left an indelible imprint on me. By the time I was 13, I was such an angry girl. I had built a brick wall around me, and it reached high above my head. My black and white thinking had already kicked in, and I was busy honing it to a fine point. I had established loads of truths, some of them that I honestly have held on to quite recently. A few of them I can think of. I had decided that no man could be trusted with my well-being, that nobody was ever going to walk all over me. I would never drink or use drugs, nor would I tolerate those who did. And finally, the biggest one, and one that I'm deeply ashamed of, or have been in the past anyways, was that I simply was going to be smarter than my mother, that I was going to choose a partner well, and that I was going to be safe. But as you can imagine, that's not what happened. At 22, I married a man who I thought was the exact opposite of my father. He was my good friend and a wonderful father to our 4 kids. But my foundation was fear and a deep sense of inadequacy, and his upbringing had been pretty rough. So somewhere around our 20th year of marriage, something happened. And, you know, honestly, his story is not mine to tell, but both of us have responsibility in the erosion of our partnership. While my walk was filled with loneliness and resentfulness, rage and confusion, his took a much darker and more destructive path. We lived like that for 10 years, the ever-escalating isolation and craziness. Sadly, after 30 years of marriage, the one thing that I had wanted all my life, an intact, loving, safe family, was torn apart. I had a... I had been the victim of an alcoholic father and was now the victim of a mentally ill, addicted husband, or so I thought. I was a woman who could not face my own emotions and instead blamed others, trying to make them responsible for any discomfort I felt. That discomfort often led to rage, and that exhibited itself in ways that I've been deeply ashamed of. Inside my head was a set of tapes that whispered negative things to me constantly and consistently. They had been with me all my life. And in addition to that, I was a gal who sat in judgment of others. I didn't like me. So how could I possibly like you? I hid all that under an umbrella of control and perfectionism, of which I was in complete denial about. So it was after my marriage failed that I went to Al-Anon. I actually had decided to do that for my kids. I recognized that they had lost the father that they had loved, and I thought that they would end up losing me too to anger and bitterness if I didn't do something. So I went to Al-Anon, and I spent months there before I could say a word. Being a perfectionist whose biggest fear is being laughed at or looking stupid, I sat and listened to the group so I could figure out what all the ground rules were. Al-Anon taught me a number of things. Was a real gift. I learned empathy and compassion and forgiveness for that man. But the fear inside of me still persisted, and the dark tapes were far more prevalent once my marriage fell apart. I couldn't get rid of them. So despite doing the 12 steps with a wonderful sponsor, I was not ready for all that that program had to offer. That was my then. My now looks really different. I was inspired by a trusted and wise counselor who has extensive 12-step background to go to my first ACA meeting. I did, and found that meeting in particular was just way too big for me. It was too much for my nervous system. I left it feeling really, really anxious. Months went by before I could get myself back in there. I finally scored. I found this tiny little meeting in Ojai that fit me perfectly and gave me the freedom to truly be vulnerable for the first time in decades. The Strengthening Our Recovery meeting that focuses on a concise daily reading and read meditation, and then we spend 25 to 30 minutes putting our thoughts and feelings on paper before sharing. The focus on one main theme instead of a large text helped me a lot. I was still sitting in my victimhood, but luckily I was in complete denial about that. Had I known that I had to give up my victimhood, I probably would have left, because it was a safe landing spot for me at the time. It kind of fit me like a great old pair of jeans, to be honest with you. Well, once I got comfortable in my little meeting there, I reached out to other meetings. I found a safe women's meeting that was full of great recovery. And then I started going to every meeting I could, because what I realized was when I was in a meeting, I found people that understood me, my brokenness, shared my tears, understood my fears, and never once did I ever feel laughed at or judged. I just felt better. Another thing that I started at the time was I developed a gratitude practice. I had to do a ton of faking it before I had any success, but I consider myself, or I did consider myself, a fairly negative person. But that practice has made a huge difference and sort of prepared the recovery path for a much smoother walk. So finally, I started coming out of denial. Becoming aware that the psychological projections of my emotions onto others and that the horrible records that played in my head, commonly known as negative automatic thoughts, started me on the path to recovery. It was not, and still is not, easy for me. I felt like a failure for months and months and months. I did everything I could think of. I put slogans on my walls at home and at work here. I read every book I could get a hold of. I listened to books on tape in my car. I listened to AA, Al-Anon, and ACA recovery tapes. But even though I knew the slogan, respond, don't react, I was losing on two fronts. I'm going to back up just a little bit. My reactions to situations are triggers would be to blow up, no matter what. Whenever that happened, my reactions became the focus instead of the thing that was prompting my reaction. I just was losing on both fronts. Tommy gave those reactions a name. He called it Regina, and it was never pleasant. I was super confused about who Regina was. She is a total bitch, and I often felt like she was my critical inner parent, but after doing some work, I realized that Regina is nothing more than my ego desperately trying to protect my inner child. She's a coping mechanism that I developed when I was a little girl when I didn't feel safe. The biggest change for me has been to become my own loving parent. I have just grabbed onto that idea. Each time I hear the solution read, I feel like another layer is being peeled off, and I'm able to take a breath and allow that to wash over me with the comfort of my higher power. As I try to master that, the idea of lavishing myself with unconditional love, the other things have started to fall into place. It's just really, really been great experience. In addition to that, I am doing my 12 steps with a fellow traveler whose recovery walk has inspired me. And what I found was that she was going in a direction I wanted to go. So I asked her a while ago to walk with me, and she was busy. But recently, it just worked out really well, and so it's been absolutely great. So what I have learned, I realize that blaming others may work in the short term, but it is powerfully disempowering. My feelings are my own and not someone else's responsibility. Intellectual knowledge of that fact does not mean that I successfully do the deed. The body keeps score, and healing the trauma is essential for change. Often because of the pain stored in my body, it takes me a little while to ground myself in my program. when I trip up, the thought process is no longer the negative automatic thoughts that, you know, you're no good, you're a failure. Instead, it's been replaced with me trying to look at the uncomfortable feelings from a distance, and in the end, spending a good deal of time comforting my inner child and visualizing warm hugs and unconditional love. I also have gained the beginnings of what I recognize as belonging. That's a new and weird and wonderful thing, and I look forward to having that become much more natural. So my relationship with me is brand new. I have learned to love myself as I've watched you all try to do the same. I'm learning to be a safe place for me. So Regina, she doesn't come around as much as she used to. For that, I am so grateful, as are a good many other people. If you are new here tonight, one thing I love about ACA is that each meeting has a different format, a different focus, a different feeling. And with patience and persistence, I hope that you find a place to call home. I want to do a shout out right now to my fellow travelers from my Friday night meeting. You know who you guys are. I love you guys. And I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience, your strength, and your hope until I had a little of my own. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you so much, Linda, for sharing your story with us. Thank you both so much, Tommy and Linda.